Welcome back, everybody, for another deep dive. This time we're going to be talking about a Supreme Court case that really kind of shines a light on antitrust law and purchasing cooperatives. And, you know, this whole idea of a group boycott.
Yeah. And you know, this case really kind of forces us to ask some pretty interesting questions about fair competition and how antitrust laws, you know, apply to business practices that might seem at first glance like pretty normal.
Exactly. And so this case focuses on Pacific Stationery and Printing Company, which got kicked out of a buying cooperative called Northwest Wholesale Stationers.
Right.
And so they basically said, hey, this is unfair. And they took it to court, claiming unfair practices. And so today we're really going to kind of dig into whether being kicked out of a co-op can be a big deal in terms of antitrust law.
Right.
And we're going to explore the power of these buying groups. And, you know, are there any rules about how they operate? So what do you think, like right off the bat, what's the most important thing for our listener to understand about this case?
Well, I think to really understand the nuances of this case, it's really important to understand how these purchasing cooperatives work and how they fit into the larger market landscape.
Yeah, so let's break it down then. Like, what is a purchasing cooperative? How does it actually work?
So think of it as a way for smaller retailers to join forces and gain some real purchasing power.
Okay.
Northwest Wholesale Stationers, the cooperative in this case, is a great example. You know, by banding together, these smaller retailers can buy in bulk directly from manufacturers or wholesalers, just like the big box stores do.
So it's almost like it's leveling the playing field a bit so they can kind of compete on price with the big guys.
Exactly. You know, and this is what you call economies of scale. So they get lower prices per unit because they're buying in bulk.
Makes sense. But are these cooperatives exclusive clubs or can any business buy from them?
That's a really good question. So non-members can usually buy from them, but they're going to pay the regular price.
Right.
The real advantage for members is profit sharing. And this is often in the form of rebates based on how much they purchase during the year.
So, you know, membership has its privileges. It's literally like a built-in discount.
Exactly.
And I can see how that would be, you know, a big draw for smaller retailers who are just trying to stay competitive.
Yeah.
Sounds like, you know, Northwest Wholesale Stationers was really doing its job, you know, providing good service to its members, helping them save money and potentially stock a wider variety of products. But then they kicked out Pacific Stationery. So what happened?
So the details around this are a bit murky, which really, you know, makes this case intriguing. So Pacific Stationery claims they were kicked out without a clear explanation or any opportunity to appeal the decision.
So it's like being kicked out of a club without knowing why and not even getting a chance to defend yourself.
Exactly. And to make things even more confusing, there are conflicting accounts about the reason for the expulsion. So Pacific Stationery claims it was because they also had a wholesale operation, which some members may have seen as competition.
Ah, so a conflict of interest there.
Precisely. But Northwest Wholesale Stationers offers a different explanation. They claim the expulsion was due to Pacific's failure to notify them about a change in stock ownership.
So almost like violating the membership agreement.
Exactly. And here's the thing. The sources that we have, including the minutes from the meeting where the expulsion was decided, don't definitively clarify the real motive.
Wow. So we're left with this ambiguity.
Yeah.
Why they were shown the door. So, okay. We have a purchasing cooperative, we have an expulsion shrouded in mystery, and we have a company claiming foul play. So how does the Sherman Act, the cornerstone of antitrust law, come into all of this?
So this is where the legal complexities really come into play. So the Sherman Act is basically all about preventing monopolies and making sure businesses compete fairly.
Okay.
And it prohibits what they call unreasonable restraints of trade, which is a broad term that covers a lot of ground.
And Pacific Stationery is arguing that being kicked out of this cooperative qualifies as one of these unreasonable restraints of trade.
That's right. They're alleging what's called a per se violation under the Sherman Act.
So for those of us who aren't lawyers, what exactly does per se violation mean?
So per se violations are like the slam dunks of antitrust law, you know?
Okay.
These are business practices that are considered so inherently anti-competitive that courts don't need a lot of evidence to prove they're illegal.
Gotcha.
They're considered automatically harmful to competition. So think of it like price fixing between competitors.
Okay.
Or denying a competitor access to an essential facility needed to do business.
So it's like practices that are almost guaranteed to stifle competition and hurt the consumer in the process. So Pacific Stationery is trying to argue that their expulsion falls into this category.
Exactly. They're calling it a group boycott, which is often considered a per se violation under the Sherman Act.
Okay.
But antitrust law, you know, it's rarely black and white, and that's what makes this case so fascinating.
It sounds like we have a legal puzzle on our hands. But before we jump into the court's decision, there's one more legal wrinkle that we need to address, and that is the Robinson-Patman Act. What does that have to do with our cooperative case?
That's a really good point. You bring that up. So the Sherman Act is the big one here.
Right.
But the Robinson-Patman Act adds another layer of complexity. So it mainly deals with price discrimination, which is when a business charges different prices to different buyers for the same product. But Section 4 of this act is relevant to our case because it offers cooperatives some immunity from these price discrimination claims.
So wait, cooperatives are allowed to discriminate on prices? That doesn't sound very fair.
So hold on, it's not that straightforward. So the immunity provided by Section 4 applies specifically to how cooperatives distribute their profits among their members. Remember those rebates we talked about earlier based on how much each member purchased?
Right, right.
That's the type of price discrimination that's protected.
So it's designed to protect the core function of profit sharing.
Exactly.
Not to give them a free pass to just do whatever they want.
Exactly. It's a narrow shield, not a blanket exemption from antitrust laws.
Okay.
And this distinction is crucial to understanding how the court ultimately ruled in this case.
So we've set the stage here for our deep dive into the court's decision. We have a cooperative expulsion with unclear motives. We have claims of a group boycott and a per se violation, and the Robinson-Patman Act's adding its own twist.
So what did the courts make of all of this?
That's what we'll unpack when we get back.
Okay, so we left off with, you know, a bit of a cliffhanger. So what happened when this case actually went to court?
Well, the Court of Appeals initially sided with Pacific Stationery.
Okay.
They said, yeah, this expulsion was a per se violation of the Sherman Act. And they put a lot of emphasis on the, you know, the lack of fairness in the process.
Okay.
You know, Pacific wasn't given notice or a hearing or a chance to even defend themselves before they got kicked out.
Mm-hmm.
And the court viewed this lack of what they called due process as inherently anti-competitive.
So even if they had valid reasons for kicking Pacific out, the fact that they didn't follow a fair process made it like automatically illegal. Yeah, that was their logic. And they drew a parallel to a previous case, Silver versus New York Stock Exchange, where the Supreme Court had ruled that, you know, self-regulation by an organization could only avoid this per se scrutiny if they had adequate safeguards in place.
Okay.
Essentially, you can't just, you know, make up the rules as you go along and expect to be exempt from antitrust law.
Right. So they applied that same logic to Northwest and Pacific.
Mm-hmm.
But you said the Supreme Court actually disagreed and overturned that decision.
They did. And this is where it gets really interesting because, you know, it really highlights how legal precedent isn't always a perfect fit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Supreme Court said, well, the Silver case doesn't really apply neatly to this situation.
Why not? It does seem kind of similar on the surface.
Right.
An organization policing its own members and, you know, maybe using that power to reduce competition.
The key difference is in the nature and scope of the regulatory framework.
Yeah.
You know, in the Silver case, the New York Stock Exchange was operating under the Securities Exchange Act, which specifically authorized them to self-regulate. So in a way, Congress had given the exchange limited antitrust immunity to manage its own members.
But that's not the case with our cooperative and the Robinson-Patman Act.
Exactly. Robinson-Patman Act provides very specific immunity for cooperatives.
Right.
And it only applies to how they distribute profits among their members. Remember, we were talking about those rebates.
Right.
That's the type of price discrimination that's protected under Section 4.
So it's not giving them just like, you know, free rein to do whatever they want.
Exactly.
It's about that very specific element.
Mm-hmm.
So the Supreme Court basically said, hold on, the lack of safeguards doesn't automatically make this a per se violation. We need to look deeper
right,
to see if the expulsion itself was really anti-competitive.
Exactly. They pushed back against this, you know, knee-jerk reaction of just labeling it a group boycott and invoking the per se rule.
Mm.
They said, let's look at the context, let's look at the specific facts and figure out, you know, what was the real impact on competition.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
So how did the Supreme Court go about analyzing the potential anti-competitive effects of Pacific's expulsion?
Well, they took a broader view. You know, they acknowledged that not all, you know, refusals to deal, even if they seem unfair, are automatically illegal under antitrust law.
So just because a bunch of companies get together and say, we're not doing business with this guy,
right,
it doesn't automatically mean that they're violating the Sherman Act.
Correct. The Supreme Court really emphasized that some joint activities like forming a purchasing cooperative
right,
can actually promote competition and benefit consumers.
Because as we talked about earlier, it allows these smaller players to band together and get better prices.
Exactly.
Which then can get passed on to consumers.
And the court recognized that, you know, there's potential for increased efficiency, lower costs in this type of arrangement. So they urged caution when applying these per se rules to these situations.
So kicking someone out of a cooperative doesn't automatically mean that there's an intent to just crush all competition.
Right. They drew a distinction between simply expelling a member.
Right.
And using that expulsion as a weapon to harm competition.
Okay.
It really comes down to intent and impact.
So how can we determine if an expulsion goes too far? You know, crosses that line from being, you know, reasonable to an actual violation?
Well, the Supreme Court had some guidance on that, and they said one of the key factors is whether the cooperative has significant market power.
So do they control enough of the market to essentially, like, dictate prices?
Exactly, or shut out competitors. If they have that kind of power, then kicking someone out could have a real impact on competition.
Right, because it limits their ability to, you know, get supplies, reach customers.
Perfect.
But in this case, the court pointed out that Pacific Stationery hadn't really shown that Northwest Wholesale Stationers had that kind of power in the market.
Right. The court seemed to believe that Pacific, despite the expulsion, you know, still had other ways to get supplies and compete. They also emphasized that cooperatives have a legitimate interest in creating rules for their members.
Sure. So they need a way to maintain order.
Right.
Make sure that the cooperative is running smoothly.
Exactly. And the court recognized that sometimes expelling a member might be necessary to protect the interests of the whole group.
But it doesn't mean that they can just use these expulsions as a way to, you know, stifle all competition.
No, absolutely not. And the Supreme Court was very clear that in cases where there's no clear evidence of market power or an intent to harm competition, the court should apply what's called a rule of reason analysis.
Okay, rule of reason. That sounds a lot more complex than per se. What does that involve?
It's a more nuanced approach where the court weighs the potential pro-competitive and anti-competitive effects of the action.
Okay.
So they look at a lot of factors like the cooperative's market share, the reasons behind the expulsion, the impact on the expelled member's ability to compete, and so on.
So they're looking at the whole picture.
Exactly.
To see if it was truly anti-competitive.
That's right. And in this case, the Supreme Court sent it back down to the lower courts to conduct this rule of reason analysis. They wanted a more thorough examination of the facts to really determine if Pacific Stationery's expulsion was truly, you know, an unreasonable restraint of trade.
So a lot of legal back and forth. But yeah. What are the main takeaways from this decision for our listener? What's the big picture here?
I think the biggest takeaway is that antitrust law, especially when it comes to these cooperative ventures, it's not always black and white.
Right.
You know, expulsion from a cooperative doesn't automatically equal an illegal group boycott. You really have to look at the circumstances, you know, the cooperative's market power and the impact on competition overall.
That's a really important point. Thanks for walking us through all of that. That was really helpful.
You're welcome.
So this case really shows how complex these issues can be.
Absolutely. And it really underscores the need for careful consideration when applying antitrust laws to, you know, these new business models like purchasing cooperatives.
You know, this has been a really interesting discussion. So let's kind of shift gears a bit and bring it back to our listeners. You know, if you're a small business owner and you're thinking about joining a cooperative, what are some things to keep in mind from this case?
I think this case really highlights the importance of understanding the cooperative's rules and bylaws, you know, before you join.
Right.
Like, what are the grounds for expulsion? Are there safeguards in place to make sure things are fair and transparent?
So it's kind of like any contract.
Yeah.
You know, you got to read that fine print before you sign on the dotted line.
Exactly. You also want to think about the cooperative's market power. Do they have a dominant position in the market? If so, you know, that might be a red flag.
Right. It's all about, you know, understanding those power dynamics and those potential risks. So what about those who are already members of a co-op and they're facing expulsion? What lessons can they learn from this case?
Well, I think this case shows how important it is to have a strong legal defense. You know, if you think you've been unfairly kicked out, you need to be ready to show that the expulsion is really anti-competitive, not just, you know, because of some internal disagreement or you broke some minor rule.
So gather that evidence and build a case that shows that their actions are, you know, negatively impacting the entire market.
Exactly.
Not just your business.
And don't forget to highlight any unfairness in the process. Were you given a chance to tell your side of the story? Mm-hmm. Were the reasons for your expulsion clear? You know, those procedural details can be really important.
Yeah. even if they have legitimate reasons, they can't just, you know, act unfairly.
Mm-hmm.
Due process is important, even in the business world.
Absolutely.
This case really shows that, so this deep dive has really shown us just how complex antitrust law can be. And, you know, that line between promoting cooperation and preventing anti-competitive behavior, it's a tough one.
It is. And it leaves us with a question for our listeners. You know, do you think cooperatives should have to provide more protection for their members, even if it makes it harder to enforce the rules or maybe, you know, impacts their efficiency? Where do we draw the line?
That's a great question. And, you know, it's not an easy one to answer.
Right.
We saw that, you know, the lack of due process was a concern for the Court of Appeals.
Mm.
But the Supreme Court, you know, seemed to prioritize the right of the cooperative to self-regulate.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a debate that will probably continue, you know, as the cooperative model changes over time.
Absolutely. This case shows us that antitrust law has to keep evolving,
right,
to deal with new business models and all these changes in the market.
It really makes you think about the role of cooperatives in our economy,
mm,
and how important it is to make sure everyone's treated fairly.
Mm-hmm.
So big thanks to our expert for breaking this down for us today.
It was my pleasure.
And to our listeners, thanks for joining us for this deep dive. We hope you found it helpful, and we'll catch you on the next one.